Live on Tape, Work in Progress, a World at Work podcast about work, life, and everything in between. With award-winning radio host Tom Alexander and Workspan's Not Safe for Work columnist Charles Epstein. Here are your hosts, Tom and Charles.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Work in Progress. My name is Tom Alexander, and as always, I am joined by my good friend and podcast partner. It is Charles Epstein. Hey, Charles.
Hey, Tom. Today, we'll be speaking with Axtria's Daniel Stewart, who is their Director of Commercial Excellence, which, if memory serves, is a title you strenuously lobbied for here at Work in Progress. I believe it was briefly entertained, but the powers that be decided we needed to establish that we consistently rose to the level of good before even thinking about achieving a consistent level of excellence.
Yes, the shareholders voted it down. Anyway, we're here to tell about it. So
yes, I'll tell you. I just want to let you know, for the record, I was totally in favor of moving forward with that title. I thought it would be at least a constant reminder of what we're aiming for.
Yes, and at least a good punchline. So
yeah, exactly. But anyway, getting back to Dan Stewart. He co-leads the Sales Compensation Strategy and Design Center of Excellence at Axtria, among his other roles. And today we'll be discussing the biggest challenges in designing sales compensation programs, how to balance global versus local concerns, fees, and managing compensation, and other issues, which, by the way, will be something of a preview of his presentation at World of Work Spotlight on Sales Compensation Conference in Chicago, which runs from August 23rd through the 25th.
Yeah, very much looking forward to speaking with Daniel Stewart from Axtria. He's next, right here on Work in Progress. Back in a moment.
Data, the mantra of business today. It's nothing new to World at Work. It's no small feat that they've been collecting data on salary issues for its salary budget survey for more than 45 years. Think about it, 45 years. Curious to know how your company stacks up? HR execs in the know rely on World at Work's salary budget survey. Shouldn't you too? Go to worldatwork.org/salarybudgetsurvey to learn more.
Axtria's Daniel Stewart boasts one of the most succinct, to-the-point titles of any guest we've ever had on the show, Director Commercial Excellence. Dan co-leads the Sales Compensation Strategy and Design Center of Excellence at Axtria, among his other roles. Founded in 2010, Axtria is a global provider of cloud software and data analytics to the life sciences industry, which enables customers to efficiently manage data, leverage data science to deliver insights for sales and marketing planning, and manage end-to-end commercial operations, driving sales growth and improving healthcare outcomes for patients. And he speaks to us today from Indianapolis. Daniel, welcome.
Hi, Tom. Great pleasure to be here.
Well, it's wonderful to have you. Please say hello to my podcast partner, Charles Epstein.
Hey, Charles. How are you doing?
Hey, Dan, doing great. Thanks so much for joining us. Director Commercial Excellence. I'm not sure that we have anybody who answers to that title or anything close to that here in our podcast. So that is pretty impressive, Dan.
It's at least different.
It is. You know, in an exchange we had to prepare for this, you mentioned that you started to learn chess in 2020 as your COVID hobby. And as most people know, it's not easy for an adult to learn chess. It's, as you had mentioned in an email to me, that adults are sort of handicapped by simply being adults in trying to pick up tennis. And he said that it has motivated you to learn as a self-experiment. So how is the self-experiment going, Dan?
Yeah, that's a great question, Charles. So anything that I'm not supposed to be able to be capable of interests me as something that I want to test, and especially if it's learning something new, which is always something I enjoy. And so the experiment has been going okay. Progress has been made. I can confirm the sort of known fact that yes, children can learn much, much faster than adults when it comes to chess specifically, I'm sure among other things as well.
Sure.
But it's been great. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, obviously it goes for languages too. Obviously, when you're young, your mind, I think, is just a lot more plastic. And it's just easier to pick up and to have some of this stuff stamped on it forevermore. So I take your point. I know you're going to be presenting at World at Work Spotlight on Sales Compensation, the conference in Chicago, which runs from August 23rd through the 25th. And as many of our listeners know, the conference will focus on how organization can build sales compensation plans with agility in an ever-changing environment. We do want to ask several questions and give our listeners a sneak preview at what you'll be presenting without, of course, revealing too much, just enough to make them want to attend. So before we get to what you'll be discussing, let me begin by taking a step back and asking, what have been some of the biggest challenges sales compensation programs have faced historically?
A great question, Charles. And I, as we go into this, I want to add that I've always been a great supporter of the work that World at Work does and a contributor in the small ways I can. I'm excited to be presenting again at that sales comp conference, Spotlight on Sales Compensation. Haven't been back in a couple of years, obviously last year, for sort of known reasons, but very excited. Specific to your question. So I think in for the folks that are practitioners of this on the call, you'll probably recognize a lot of these. I think number one overall is lack of program level strategy and governance. And when I say program, I mean at the sort of corporate overall level within a given company. And these are things like defining your sales compensation philosophy. Now, that may sound a little soft or hokey, but it has real implications because there are actual database KPIs where you can determine if you're tracking to the philosophy you're looking for or not. Mm-hmm. In addition, just establishing kind of a program level compensation design process and review process. You would probably be surprised if I told you the size of some of the sales compensation budgets at companies and how little time some may spend on actually reviewing the effectiveness of that spend and looking for ROI improvement. And so I think just that strategy, that program level strategy and governance has always been an area for improvement. And some companies, you know, do this better than others.
Sure. So those are the historic challenges. So what are some of the challenges organizations are facing today? For instance, how has the pandemic changed compensation programs and strategies? And what do you see as the major challenges going forward?
Sure. Yeah. And I would add that there are some additional challenges that we see carried forward in maybe a different form today. And so some of those, let's say, kind of timeless challenges are around things like, for example, very often when you see commercial organizations or very specifically the sales portion of the organization attempting to change strategy suddenly, oftentimes the first thing they come to is sales compensation. They know that it's supposed to be a motivating tool for their field-facing employees. And the problem with that is if you think about the commercial strategy and operations of an organization, there's all of this work. If you think about it as, let's say, you know, just a continuum or a sort of sequential, you know, spectrum, there's all of this work that has to happen upstream of sales compensation. You have to know the sort of product or brand you're selling. You have to decide if you even need a sales force. What are your channels for essentially marketing and your go-to-market strategy. And then, of course, all of these other layers about how you might design the sales force. And finally, at the end, what sits as the last mile is sales compensation. And that's how, once all of this is decided, this is how you make sure that your go-to-market strategy is driven by the behaviors and actions of the sales force. And so if you go to that final lever alone to attempt to influence the whole commercial organization, you can imagine some of the challenges that happen from the misalignment of all of these other commercial functional areas in the org and sales compensation. And so that's one of those challenges that we've seen carried forward to today as well. It's taken on a new guise. And maybe if I can give you one more historical challenge and jump into the sort of the most recent versions of these challenges. The other one, if I were to give you one more, would be sort of scientific rigor and decision-making and actually just designing sales compensation plans. Once we get through that spectrum, that continuum I mentioned, to the point where we need to be strategic about our sales comp plans for a new product or service, oftentimes it's a little more art than science, you may find, when there really isn't a reason for that. It should be a blend of the two. So there needs to be an understanding of these important inputs, the data inputs and KPIs. Going back to the philosophy comment, if you haven't defined what you're looking for as KPIs and outcomes, then there's nothing to model to. And so I think all of that together represents some of the major challenges we've seen.
Yeah, I know what we're focusing on here is compensation. Would it be going too far afield to ask you about how you go about recruiting? Because I'm really interested if there are some characteristics that you've distilled that this is what you're looking for in a top salesperson. Because I know when you're designing a compensation program and strategy, you know, it's about motivation, which goes to performance, which goes to retention, and all this is it possible for us to veer into talking about recruitment, or again, is that sort of outside your purview?
Yeah. So Charles, if we can talk about it, just as I would be a layman in the conversation and not an expert. So I can give you what I've heard from experts, but it's not my area of expertise.
Okay. Well, can you just give me a 30-second or a 60-second answer to that? I'm just kind of curious with that caveat.
Sure. Yeah. So when I've seen this, and maybe what I'll do is I'll narrow into a particular industry where I have the most expertise. And in this case, this would be life sciences and pharmaceuticals. And so when it comes to that particular industry, oftentimes with salespeople, you need actually a blend of a lot of skills. You know, people think of salespeople and they think of this as soft skills, and this is about sort of charming people. And in reality, you know, one of the, I'd say, the most important responsibilities of a pharmaceutical sales rep is technical product expertise. Understanding the efficacy of, let's say, a given drug or therapy, its benefits versus the competition, the right patient profiles, when to not use it, and to be an actual sort of data decision-making resource for healthcare providers and doctors. So that doesn't sound like maybe your typical salesperson profile, does it? Now, they have to be able to do that and have that sales focus of, you know, I'm trying to close the deal with each interaction. Sure. I'm trying to not only add value, but get a decision or a answer back from the given customer that, yes, you know, I will, you know, the next time I see a patient that matches this profile, I will write this drug for that particular person. So it's a mix of what you might consider softer, more traditional sales skills, but depending on the industry and the role, there's also a lot of maybe technical considerations and sort of expertise around products and who are the appropriate customers.
That was an excellent layperson's perspective. So thanks for taking a crack at that, Dan. I appreciate it.
Anytime.
Daniel, we've touched on sales compensation at length today, but if you were to boil down the essential elements in developing a sales compensation plan, what would you say those elements are?
Yeah, that's another great question that oftentimes it seems obvious, but the answer may not be so obvious unless you're a regular practitioner. So number one, we always start with strategy, and it's not just in lip service. The idea is that the purpose of a sales comp plan is it's supposed to motivate behaviors, drive outcomes. And what are those behaviors and outcomes? They're all supposed to be aligned to the commercial strategy, and maybe even more specifically, a given product strategy or a given service go-to-market strategy. And so that's where we start all of our conversations anytime we're designing sales compensation plans for our clients. Once you have alignment to strategy, the next thing is, and by the way, this one's going to seem really obvious, but you'll be surprised how often it's missed. You need to be designing a plan on metrics that are actually influenceable by the sales team or people that are going to get paid on this plan. And once again, that seems obvious, but we have seen dislocations and misalignments where there is a certain outcome that leaders are looking to drive, and they want to measure and pay the sales team on it. Yet the sales team has very little impact on those outcomes. And so when you set up a plan like that, it just leads to disappointment for everyone. One, both sales leaders and commercial leaders not getting the results they want, and sales people who can't actually control their pay outcomes. And then finally, the third item is that it needs to be based on some sort of data-based, ideally, some sort of quantitative-based metric that is objective and consistently measurable over time. We talk about things that have to be sort of compensation or incentive grade data, because you can't just use anything. It has to be very consistent over time. There is nothing worse than a sales team being completely sidetracked by trying to sort of calculate their own comp. And they spend so much of their own time trying to disprove that the data we're using is accurate. And that actually is a huge time sink that we see. So those are the three most important elements, Tom.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. You know, as we mentioned, you will be presenting at World at Work Spotlight on sales compensation. Your session is titled Building a Global Sales Compensation Function to Enable Local Strategy, which will answer the central question, how can the global sales compensation role work best with local markets to ensure their needs are met while also adhering to corporate expectations and compensation best practices? People will be going to Chicago for the long answer. Dan, for our listeners, perhaps you can give us a short answer.
Yep, absolutely. So the short answer, and I'm going to give you a couple bullets with this, is that we recommend evaluating this independently for each company using a few frameworks that we think will help set the strategy for this. And we can go through some of that here today at a high level. At the sort of highest level, those frameworks are, and this is, by the way, what we're going to cover in Chicago. One is evaluating just which decisions and processes need to be done more locally versus or regionally versus harmonized globally. In addition, we have a structure and a framework we recommend using to help companies figure out then how they set up a governance and review a sort of set of committees and workflow to support these decisions at each level of the organization. And then we also have a scorecard that we recommend folks use to understand how well they're tracking against what they have defined as sort of the optimal structure for their company and the industry they're in.
Our guest is actually Daniel Stort, Director of Commercial Excellence. What are some of the most common challenges and concerns from local markets and leaders to global control over sales compensation decisions? And how do you assuage those concerns?
Yeah, this is a great point, because very often when, and you could just put yourselves in you know, someone's shoes here, if you hear the words as a local leader in a matrix organization, which it can be a very complex structure. When you hear the words harmonization, right? When you hear the words best practices, you may immediately think of, and depending on your experience with maybe this happening poorly in the past, you may immediately think of lack of control you know, loss of authority and sort of, you know, no longer being able to sort of customize what you need for your given market and your given local organization. And I think that's because, you know, once again, speaking to folks who live in these matrix organizations day to day, that there's a lot of complexity with decision making globally, regionally, and locally. And so some of the, you know, main concerns that we hear are related just to that, around the idea that, you know, folks lack control, that they no longer are able to do what they need to support their you know, local business needs. Not every market's the same, and depending on the industry, the go-to-market strategy and local market needs, the cultural needs, the data constraints, the regulatory controls can be very, very different. And so, you know, harmonization can sometimes be a bad word from that perspective. The way you assuage those concerns is, first of all, not answering that question from the global corporate perspective. Right. So from the global corporate's perspective, some of these benefits of globalization are, you know, reduced risk in operations, you know, increased purchasing power, and oftentimes reduced costs, both from purchasing, you know, solutions, technology, infrastructure, as well as the operations and administration of those technology solutions in these comp plans. These are not things that local leaders want to hear. What they want to hear instead is that, you know, we are going to, you know, remove from you and your local organization the need to do administrative tasks and data processing and the hard work around that. And instead, we're going to provide you the best in class tools to make your own strategic decisions that will best suit your local market. And what that looks like in practice is dictated in large part, we would say, by these a few frameworks, which we can maybe review in a little more detail here at the end of towards the end of this call. But that's how you essentially answer the question, is you show them the benefits they will receive, and you can be aware as well, obviously, of the global corporate benefits you'll receive. It's just that message would fall on deaf ears if that's what you use to try to bring everyone on board. Maybe one last thing is you have to make sure they have a seat at the table too. So you need to make sure they feel like they're a stakeholder in the process, and that they their voice has some degree of control over the process as well.
To the details of this question, you know, the sort of inherent tension or the need to balance the concerns of local versus local markets versus global control. How do you determine which aspects of the sales compensation function / program to harmonize or centralize globally versus providing more local market flexibility and control? Not to put too fine a point on it, but if we can put a finer point on it.
Absolutely, Charles. No, I'd love to. So I'll do this at kind of a higher, more, you know, summary level. So when we think about just generally enterprise, like corporate level service standardization, which is what these are, you know, these internal sales op functional areas are really services provided to, you know, these different teams and sales organizations. When we think about standardization, we break that into three broad categories. One is around strategy, strategic positioning, strategy, go-to-market strategy, however you want to think of that. Another is business processes, the operations or administration. And finally, a third one is around infrastructure, information technology, and tools. So three broad groups, right? Strategy, operations, and tools or infrastructure. And so we kind of tackle each one of those differently. And maybe what I'll do is I'll spend some time on just the first one, the strategy, as kind of the glimpse behind the scenes into what people can expect to see in Chicago. So when we think about strategy, we like to think of this as a really handy framework as two dimensions in terms of how we evaluate where to allow strategy for sales comp decision makings to happen. One spectrum or one part, you know, one axis would be the similarity across all of the markets globally in their go-to-market strategy. And so, in other words, if you think of a company, and I'm just going to use, I'll use generics, but if you think of a company that sells a widget, and that widget, acts the same and does the same thing and sort of has the same value prop for sort of everyone in the world. You're not going to sell it differently or go to market differently in different regions. Brazil is going to look the same as the US. That's going to look the same as Australia, China, et cetera. If that's true, then you'd be on one end of the spectrum. And the more different that go-to-market strategy is, you're kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum. And then we do the same thing on the other axis, which is more around the operational characteristics. So how different are the regulatory or rules or laws associated with this industry from market to market? How different are the data constraints and the data challenges? And so that's on a spectrum as well. Now, here comes the fun part. Once you can plot your company on that spectrum, we break that into four quadrants. And so four companies that look like have very similar go-to-market strategies globally across their markets and also have very similar operational considerations and constraints. What we would recommend for a company in that quadrant is you should have a global sales compensation plan. Meaning the decision making and strategy needs to happen at the global corporate level. Everything is so similar that there is no benefit. In fact, there will be detriments to trying to break up that decision making and sort of regionally, place the strategy when we know globally it's all the same or very similar, right? Because this is a spectrum. So we would recommend developing actual global plans and doing the strategy globally for a company that looks like that. And I'll give you just maybe, we don't have to go through all four quadrants necessarily, but let me give you another one. Let's say that go-to-market strategy is still the same. We have a company that per my first example, it looks very similar across the globe. We'll use my industry of expertise for that, which is kind of pharmaceuticals, let's say. Very similar, not the same, but I'm just saying similar go-to-market strategy. It's the same product generally place to place. It has the same benefit for people. The marketing tactics are different, but nevertheless. But what is different in this quadrant that I'm talking about is that the operational considerations are different. The regulatory rules, the laws, what you can and can't do, the type of data you can access, the timing and constraints around that data. It's all very different. And it's not, when I say data, this is typically almost all the time, not data that's internal to these pharma companies. They're having to get it from third party sources. Sometimes the governments and the countries they're operating. And in those situations, it's very hard to make global plan decisions, like I said in the first example, given all of the nuances. And so instead, what we recommend is that those decisions are made more regionally and locally, but with the support globally of archetypes, which are different plan types that are designed to meet the strategy of the corporation, but with different sort of typical archetypes of the operational considerations. In other words, you group countries by similar regulatory and data considerations, and you can develop general archetypes. And those are what are given as guidance to regional and local teams and leaders to make decisions that best suit the needs within their market. So, of course, there's answers for the other quadrants as well. We don't have to go into.
I'm glad you're leaving those two or at least two other quadrants off, because we need people to come and hear what you have to say in Chicago, Dan.
Exactly right.
We need a little bit of a cliffhanger. And by the way, really looking forward, people coming out. I mean, we've all been sheltering in place, living, breathing, doing business on Zoom for low these many months. So the opportunity to come out and press the flesh and get reacquainted with some of the people we've only been dealing with virtually. I'm looking forward to this, and hopefully things will start really to open up and we can do all this in a safe way. So all the best when you guys hit Chicago, Dan.
Really appreciate it, Charles. Yeah, I don't think I'm not sure if I was there 2019. I think I was last there presenting in 2018. So I too am very excited to get back.
Indeed.
Daniel, we really do appreciate your time today on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Excellent. Tom, Charles, I, as always, appreciate working with World at Work. Love the content you guys put out and keep doing a great job. Thank you.
We've been joined today by Axtria's Daniel Stewart, Director, Commercial Excellence. He spoke to us today from Indianapolis. This is Work in Progress. Back in a moment.
Data, the mantra of business today. It's nothing new to World at Work. It's no small feat that they've been collecting data on salary issues for its salary budget survey for more than 45 years. Think about it, 45 years. Curious to know how your company stacks up? HR execs in the know rely on World at Work's salary budget survey. Shouldn't you too? Go to worldatwork.org/salarybudgetsurvey to learn more.
Wrapping things up now on Work in Progress, along with Charles Epstein, I'm Tom Alexander. Axtria's Dan Stewart, Daniel Stewart, joined us today, Charles. Some really interesting stuff and a lot to take in.
Yes, yes. And by the way, you are Tom Alexander. So truth in advertising.
Establish. As far as I know. When I woke up today. When I woke up this morning, I checked and I was still Tom Alexander.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Excellent conversation with Dan and a good preview of his upcoming presentation at World of Work Spotlight on sales compensation, on building a global sales compensation function to enable local strategy. And, you know, Tom, by the way, I was particularly intrigued by his deciding to learn chess during COVID, which, as he mentioned, and as we know, is tough as an adult. In fact, if you're serious, if it's something you really want to master, at least at a certain level, you really need to learn it before adolescence if you're going to play for anything more than fun.
Well, you know, it's funny because you said you kind of likened it to learning a language. It's a lot easier to learn a new language when you're younger. I just think we're more of a sponge at that age, you know, yeah. When we're really little and the world is a new place for everybody. And you just seem to retain it better as a child.
Yeah. You know, it's tough taking on any new skill. You know, I sometimes find it hard to get out of old habits, you know, let alone acquiring a new skill. For instance, sometimes it's just easy to throw on what I call music comfort food versus listening to new things. You know, it takes work. And sometimes, particularly when you're looking to acquire a new skill, overcoming a lot of initial frustration. Yeah, things just don't come as easily as they did when we were younger. Mm-hmm. And unlike a lot of people who get more patient as they mature, I'm still waiting for that to happen, Tom.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's why I watch, you know, old sporting events, because I know what the outcome's going to be.
Well, well, that gives new meaning to comfort food viewing.
But it sure does.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
But so kudos to Dan for pushing himself and trying to, you know, acquire. You play chess, I play chess, but, you know, not at the level, you know, where you can really be competitive. And obviously he's looking to get to that level. And I know from some chess playing friends of mine that, one, for instance, recently gave it up because it's just too much work. It was too time consuming. So if he really wants to get serious about it, I think he's going to have to start having some very serious conversations with his wife.
Yeah, probably. And anything, you know, you want to master anything, and it's you got to put in the hours, and it is a challenge. And I've often joked that yes, I'm Greek and the hours are hell, you know, because it's the full time Greek. All right. Yes.
Is hell short for Hellenistic? Or
yes, that's right. Hey, very good. Oh, okay. Very good.
OK, yeah. No, I thought you were going for some.
Oh, no, the hours are Hellenistic. Yes, that's okay. That's
the hours are Hellenistic.
The punchline.
Yeah. OK.
Very nicely done, Charles. For Charles Epstein. I'm Tom Alexander. We thank you so much for listening. This is Work in Progress. We'll see you next time. So long, everybody.
This has been Work in Progress, a World at Work podcast about work, life, and everything in between, with award-winning radio host Tom Alexander and Workspan's Not Safe for Work columnist Charles Epstein. For more, visit worldatwork.org/workinprogress. That's worldatwork.org/workinprogress. Join us next week for another edition of Work in Progress.